Hi again, everybody. It's Bill Crawford along with Matt Pocket, joined by Damon Whitten. It's our June edition of the Laker Hockey Show, or Laker Hockey Talk, whichever you prefer. And this show runs middle of the month. This is the, as I say, June version. You can rehear this both on podcast and on Thursday morning this week. And if you're listening on Thursday morning, well, you're already in on what we're doing here. But we're going to update you on what's going on with the Lakers. A month ago, we talked about coming off a championship season in the WCHA and playing in the NCAA tournament for the first time in 25 seasons. A lot of great things we talked about. We also talked about all the seniors who are departing via graduation, and we've lost Ashton Calder and Pete Violette, a couple of our leading scorers, and we've got to shore that up, and we'll talk about that today. But the big thing is that our head coach has been given a six-year extension on his contract, a great reward for a job well done. In fact, Damon, you've had two of the last three seasons been pretty darn exciting and pretty good, and certainly we're headed in the right direction with what we're doing. And congratulations to you on an extension. It certainly frees you up to not worry too much about the job at this point. Now you can just do the job and build this program and continue to make it a great program.
Yeah, well, thank you, Bill, and you know, very appreciative of the opportunity to keep leading. I know for Angie and I and our family, we're really excited to continue to call Sault Ste. Marie home. It's one of the challenges of our businesses is how much we move around and the instability at times. So we're very appreciative of the opportunity, and certainly not sitting here with that extension without the large part, the players that have come through, the job the guys have done over the last 6-7 years of putting the foundation in place and then getting us over the hump. And very appreciative to the players and the staff that have all been part of it. It takes so much to kind of get it going, and a lot of people behind the scenes that maybe aren't on the bench with us, but they're doing marketing and promotions and social media. So it takes a great team, and I've been very fortunate and thankful to have so many great people around us. And I think that's one of the big lessons. You have to have great people around you, and we were able to kind of get that right over the years and get the right players in the locker room and the right staff on board. And so thanks again, and thank you to the fans who have supported and stuck by a little bit, some lean years, and certainly some questions early on. But it's been good to see these last couple of years come together, and kind of the belief in our philosophy and our structure paying off, and now it gets even tougher to sustain and get back there. And our goal certainly is to get back to the NCAA tournament next year and now advance. Our guys are all hungry to get to the Frozen Four. Obviously we were very close and lost to the national championship team in UMass, and that's going to drive us and motivate us to get back to that level.
Is there a moment looking back the last couple of years where you started to see this thing turn around and you felt, okay, this is a turning point, this is a marker here that shows that this thing is coming together?
Yeah, I don't know that I can point to one thing, Matt. I mean, I'd be lying to you if doubts don't creep in. We face some tough years, and there's a lot of challenges to in different ways, whether it's results on the ice or just some of the battles you're facing, to take step forwards and renovating the locker room and putting some recruiting pieces in place to attract players that fit your style and that we think can get us over the hump. So I'm not sure there's one light bulb moment that said, hey, we're here. But I think, being strong in our faith and our belief in that we are doing things the right way, staying true to who we are and the way we want to operate was all a big part of it. And then, like I said, it's getting the right people. Having Mike and Zach to kind of be here and round it off has been really instrumental. We talked off the air before the show, but the job Hunter Perry's doing and Kelsey Smith are doing in their roles within the athletic department, Abby Lyle has been a big part of it. Certainly David Pateson, I know we'll talk about more about David. And even Chris, I'm here because of Chris Dunbar and the belief she had in me. And, she set a lot of things in motion to make this happen and grow and get there. So, yeah, I don't think there's one moment. I think we, for me personally, I believed we could come here and build and win a championship and get back to that level. I wish it didn't take as long as it had taken. And again, now the challenge, that's all behind us. The challenge is now is to sustain it and to grow more. And, that's kind of the focus day to day now.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things when I look back at it, I say, since Damon came here, I think a real key was that year when Diego came in and you had Gage Terrell and Anthony Nellis. and they played so much as freshmen. And then that paid off. We saw that because they played all the time, even though they lost and they got frustrated and they looked hot 1 minute and cold the next. That was a key, because when they won the GLI in their senior year, they were a strong performing trio right there, and they led us. And I think that we've built on that since and gotten to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Well, and there's, Mitch Holtz was part of that. I think he had 34 yes. points as a sophomore before signing with Anaheim. And I think that same Mitch's sophomore year, Chris Pendoulis was a good freshman defenseman that was very promising, but he signed with the Capitals after his freshman year. So, it's interesting to look back and think of all the different guys who've already come through. And, we just finalized our locker room refurbishment program or project, and we put up the final donor plates today. Gage Terrell's one of them, and so Gage and I were texting the other day, and I know Doug LaPrade's coming into this week to look at the final project. And it takes the right people, and that class was certainly a big part of it. So maybe that's Matt's question: what was one of those moments? I think that class was very I think that was that first true class, and like you said, they went through the ringer that freshman year and kept their faith and kept improving and believed in us as we believed in them. And they were certainly a huge part of turning it around. And, that GLI was big, and then, just really growing.
Yeah, the success you had this past season turns into an extension on your contract. I think it shows great confidence on the part of Dave Pates and the athletic director, and also the president. Rod Hanley has been very supportive of you as a coach and of this program. He's shown great support for the hockey program, which is really good news. And that pays off, and you get an extension, and now we're going to lose Mr. Pateson. Dave's been with us for, 3 years now, and he's going to move on and go to the University of Indianapolis and take a teaching position there, and now Lake Superior State's on the lookout for a new director of athletics.
Yeah, and I should probably back up just a little bit. You talk about getting good people around you, and you mentioned it. Dr. Hanley and his leadership for the university has been instrumental in us coming through that tough period with what happened with Dr. Plager there, and I think three presidents in that 3 year span there. So there was a lot of change and turnover, and we're certainly appreciative in athletics of Dr. Hanley's leadership and direction and commitment to the hockey program. So that's had a huge impact, and that's again just having good people around you. And David was also, as you said, very instrumental, and fans probably heard over the years, but he's got a great hockey background. He was the president of the Columbus Chill and pro hockey many years ago, as he was early on in his career, and helped bring the Blue Jackets to Columbus as well. So a great hockey person and great hockey background. And we're excited for him to move on. We hate to lose him. It's probably a year or two earlier than he liked, but this opportunity came up in the next phase of his career. He's always wanted to teach, and he's going to go into go teach sports management, and back near his hometown and where his family is. So it makes a ton of sense for David and the time of his life, but I think it's a loss, and but we'll come through stronger. We'll have to obviously hire a new athletic director, and have them get up to speed very quickly so that we can keep doing what we're doing, and not just in hockey but across the department. I think Steve Hedding has done a great job, and other coaches, so we'll be working on that. That'll be a main focus here.
Yeah, is there a timetable on that at this point? I know you're part of that committee to make a hire here. We're going to, I would think, Zoom interview people, et cetera, and we're probably into that process right now, trying to get a new AD in position before the school year starts.
Yeah, exactly. I think that timing is important. David will be here for a few more weeks, and that's good. So we'll have his leadership, extended as we get through our process. And it started early in the process now. And I think one of the, the things as things shift with COVID and restrictions and things like that, it will start Zoom based. But if things keep moving in this direction, I think it'll be nice and ideal that we get somebody on campus and spend some time face to face. So I think that's the hope. We're early in the process, but hopefully we can work diligently and get the right person on board.
What are some of the points of emphasis? What are you looking for in that next AD hire, Damon?
Well, I think some great things have been done. When you go back to Chris's time here, she was a coach. She knew how to grow programs and support coaches. That was instrumental for a lot of us and put a good foundation on that side of things for David. And then David came in, you know, his background is ticketing, marketing, promotions, and along with others, but that's a big focus of it. So, you know, he's done a great job with our community partners. And I know we did some, you know, some ads and reads a while back. Like, he's done a great job of growing that sponsorship level. And we're very thankful to those who listen in, or, you know, the small business owners, or just people who support. So David has left that in a really good spot. So I think there's flexibility on what that next person can bring in. You know, again, there's a strong foundation from Chris and her background. David, you know, brought in maybe a different skill set in some areas, and that's in a good place now. So I think it can be a wide range of skill sets. Obviously, you know, we want somebody who can come in and, you know, really relate to the coaches and help us grow our programs. I don't think we can afford to lose, you know, that marketing and sponsorship. So that's going to have to be a skill set that the candidate possess and can, you know, sustain and build even more. I think we're in a good spot. I think, you know, as we tell our players, leave the program better than when you got here. I think David in his past few years has done that, and that'll be attractive to the next candidate.
You know, one of the tough things this past season, we have a great year, and a lot of great hockey was played in the building, and yet we had no fans there. And I think that's probably one of the big questions we've all got right now is, are we going to put people back in the building this fall? I would think we're going to put some back in, given what the NHL's doing and what's going on in sports in general. I would think we're going to have people be able to see this team play again. This is the number one thing people, the fans, are concerned with.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, that's my hope, too. It was really hard to not have our fans in that building. And, you know, I know one thing that we're going through is an upgrade of our streaming process from lighting, cameras, things like that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, it's not as important, you know, because our fans locally will be in the building. But that's important. You know, we're behind on that, and that's a big project that's moving forward at a good pace. I anticipate we will at this point, and obviously we'll have to kind of follow state guidelines and what goes on. I find it interesting watching the football program say, hey, 100% attendance. Those are outdoor venues, they're a little bit different, but, you know, Bowling Green just came out and said it. I think both Michigan and Michigan State are planning on full attendance at football. So I'm watching those closely and working. I know Hunter is working diligently on the ticketing plan and packages, and, you know, I guess waiting for the right state mandates that can happen. So I think we're tracking that way and hopeful. Yeah. And obviously, like anything in this world, we'll look at COVID.
Well, and as a head coach too, you've got to be watching what's going on in the NHL playoffs right now. I mean, New York Islanders last night had a full house in that building, and what that can do to energize your hockey team, you can't measure it.
Yeah, I think especially with the year we had, it would have been magical in Taffy, and it's always great. You know, we love playing there, and the fans have such a big impact. But with what went on this year, you know, it was, and I don't know if you guys remember, but I think our first Tuesday night after the series, like, that first game was eerie. It was the strangest feeling to walk into there and have, you know, no fans, and there's 20 people in the building. It was an eerie, you know,
and they're all in the press box.
Yeah, terrible feeling. You know, when I can hear Bill, you know, calling the game down there, it's there's something wrong. So, so we're very hopeful they're back, and, you know, we need that in the building. And I think everybody's gone through so much that we hope that normalcy's there. And then the comparison, Bill, to that Islanders game is watching the Canadian series. You know, when there's nobody in the building It's just, it's a different game without fans in the building. And so hopefully we're back.
Yeah, and one thing that kind of stands out to me is that at this point, there's the benefit of time now, because things are going to change a lot, I'm sure, between now and then, and you can follow these developments, but there isn't also that pressure to make a decision middle of the season or right now or TikTok. We've got like 2 weeks to figure this out.
Yeah, and I think along with that, we know the protocols. If for some reason we take steps backwards, we've got all those protocols in place. We know how to operate, how to test, and how to manage all that. So the back end is kind of done if we face a situation like that this year or ever in the future. You know, I think we've all, you know, learn through that, and will be permanently, you know, affected by what went on. But the hope is we're back. I mean, I know things are moving in a good direction in so many places, and, you know, that'll be the plan. So I think our season ticket holders and our fans will be seeing information in the near future about what the plan is and what the package looks like. I know Great Lakes State Weekend was announced just recently as well, when more details will follow, but those dates are out there, and, you know, we'll be welcoming in St. Thomas for Great Lakes State Weekend, which will be, you know, awesome, and hopefully a normal Great Lakes State Weekend.
Rico Blasi coming to the Sioux.
Yeah, that's right. We'll welcome him back.
He's been away for a few years, but he'll be back in Sault Ste. Marie on Great Lakes State Weekend. You're listening to the Laker Hockey Show on a Thursday in the middle of June, and we're going to take a break on our show. We'll be back. We'll talk much more Laker hockey with Damon Whitten right after this on ESPN 1400. We're back with our second segment of the Laker Hockey Show. It's our June edition of the show. It's Bill Crawford along with Matt Pocket, and we're talking with Damon Whitten, the head coach of the Lakers. And Damon, I know one of the things you're doing this week is heading out on the road. There's recruiting to be done. And what can you do with that now? Up until now, it's been mostly recruiting by Zoom and by looking at video and call, I guess you can call guys and talk to them and you can talk to coaches, but is there a chance now you can actually go out and watch somebody play hockey or actually contact them face to face?
Yeah, it's back. I mean, what a great feeling for all of us. It was 13-14 months where the NCAA mandated a dead period due to COVID and travel restrictions, things like that. So we were not able to have any on-campus recruiting visits or host recruits on campus through that whole dead period. That's now lifted, and so on-campus recruiting resumes. And then, the big one is getting off campus and going into rinks to evaluate. So, we got a pretty robust schedule coming up to get out and evaluate different camps. So whether it's national camps or tryout camps, it's gotten pretty popular over the last handful of years that to go to USHL camps and, check in on some of your players and look for new players. And so, we'll be getting on the road quite a bit here. Really a busy season. And also the national camps, as I mentioned, are going on. They're starting up in Buffalo. The best players in the country will all congregate out there and, showcase their skills out there as well. So very busy recruiting time. And, it's tough and it's a grind at times, but I think when you're coming off of 14 months without it, I know Mike, Zach, and myself are really excited to get back on the road and, see other assistant coaches from around the league, the junior coaches we haven't seen face to face, and mostly just to watch hockey in that setting.
Some kids weren't even playing, of course. There were some leagues that were on. There were some leagues that weren't. Never mind you being able to watch these players live. I don't think it's possible to know for sure yet, but what kind of effects do you think that will have on player development, not even just for this class, but even classes down the road?
I think, the biggest thing is these kids, with our delayed enrollment for hockey and the kids playing junior hockey, and now with this fifth year of eligibility, there's a lot of kids in the portal. As far as I know, still don't have a home.
I think it's like 300
it's
something
huge,
right
yeah.
now.
And there's
wild.
And then all the 20-year-olds that some of them were committed, and because they got fifth-year students back, they got dropped. A lot of them weren't committed and usually get picked up late. So there's a whole cycle. Division III hockey is going to be even – it's already a great product, but it's going to be outstanding. There's a lot of players looking for homes. So there's a whole berth here or two of players that are hugely affected with any opportunity to play Division I hockey. And then, like you said, I think long-term it's a little bit hard to say. What's it going to mean? We're the U.S. leagues, we're all operating under some level. And, if you look at Ontario, some of those kids didn't play at all. Ottawa got some meaningful games in. I think it might have been no contact, which, is unique. And then BC did a good job getting some pod systems going and getting some games in. So I think it's going to be really interesting. We've got some of our incoming guys still playing, which, quite honestly, I hate. They need to be turning their focus into the gym and getting ready to step in and play against 24, 25-year-old men. I think Josh Nixon is the only guy still playing, if I have that correct. So, Josh, you don't want to root against your players, your recruits. You want them to win and win championships and compete. But I think, in my opinion, Josh needs to get in the gym now and focus on next year. So it's just a really strange year. So there's a lot of ramifications that we don't know yet, and I think we'll keep playing out over this summer and into next fall.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you look at what's going on with that portal, and we could probably spend most of the rest of this hour talking about that. We won't. We've lost one player in the portal, and that was Ashton Calder, who was going to go to North Dakota and play and finish out his career there, and so we've got to kind of make up for him, and that's a lot of goals and assists going out the door right there. But I figure we have 17 players returning, including two goaltenders who are experienced, Seth Eisley and Ethan Langenegger. and you're bringing in a young guy out of the Alberta Junior League to be your backup goaltender. Easton Hesse is his name, and he's supposed to be a pretty good goaltender, the best they had in that Alberta Junior League. So that'll be interesting to see how those guys all go after each other. I see Seth every day because he's working here in the Sioux this summer, and I talked to him quite a bit, and he looks like he's in great shape and ready to go. You got 6D returning, 9 total coming in, counting your new guys coming in. You got 9 forwards returning, probably led by Louis Bidone, who was the leading scorer who's returning. So let's talk a little bit about who's back and who's gone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'll start with, you know, the guys coming back, and we've, you know, talking about COVID and what you've learned, it was, you know, it was using Zoom and connecting with guys. You know, Louis back in France, you know, Jack Jeffers is in Ontario where things are still pretty restricted, and you know, he's pretty limited what he can do. Mira Muka's back home, had a great experience with his national team and almost made his men's national team, but had a great camp. You know, Jacob Nordquist back in Sweden and Mitch Oliver out in BC. So we have kids all over the world in different phases of, you know, lockdown and gym access and ice access. So it's pretty unique. But we're doing, you know, not weekly, but probably twice a month at least, Zoom calls with our leadership group. It includes those seniors to be next year that I just mentioned. Jumped in with them as Louis Bidon, as Bill just brought up, and Dustin Manns, I think two very impactful forwards in a lot of different ways. And then Jacob Bankston, actually, as we did exit meetings, you know, guys just raved about Jacob's ability as a leader and just a real central figure to our locker room. So Jacob Bankston, as the only sophomore in that group, but it's been a real productive summer in developing that leadership core and working with those guys and some principals. And, you know, soon we'll be lumping in some the freshmen to that group and doing a couple team Zooms as well. So that's where it starts, you know, is building that leadership group, creating that culture. And that's really our biggest focus is right now is trying to start to define leadership roles. You know, part of that is, hey, who's going to wear a letter, who's not going to wear a letter. Part of that is, you know, how do you lead and how do you impact the team and how do you have guys accountable to each other? So it's a group that's really done a really good job, and we're excited about it. You know, I think there's some questions because we lost some really good leaders, but these guys are maybe ahead of that group at the same point and doing a really good job that way. So it's been a fun group to work with, and we'll keep working on developing them.
Yeah, that was to be another question here on the show today too. I know a lot of these guys, so I know what they're like, and the guys who are leaving, the chemistry there was tremendous. You got guys like Mittens and Keibel. They're so mature, even for their age. How do you replace that? How do you keep that chemistry? And what you're saying right here is we think it's going to continue. We think we've got a cadre there that's just going to continue to build that, and the newcomers will fit right in.
Well, I don't think it's yes and no. It's not going to just continue because you did it. Like, and that's what's such a, I think, sometimes a beautiful thing with teams. You know, it just takes one departure, the different maybe it's the wrong person to come in and take you the wrong way. So it's going to take a lot of work to continue it, but I like what these guys are doing. I think they get it. They understand it. I also like that all these guys are, again, they're key players on our team. You know, if Jack Jeffers wants to get in front of the room and hold somebody accountable or say we need to be doing this, he plays a lot. He's going to get a chance to go out there and score that game-winning goal or be a power play guy or whatever. Same thing with, you know, Dustin Manns. He's out in key situations as one of our better, one of our top centers, an elite face-off guy, things like that. Jacob Nordquist, same thing. So I think you can get into, you know, it's a little bit harder to have that accountability and that leadership when guys are not contributing, you know, large contributing guys, and these guys are. So I think that gives them a lot of, you know, credibility right away within that locker room. And again, they get it. They've done a really good job of starting to kind of divvy up how they lead in certain ways and where they can most benefit the team. So we're in a good spot that way, but, you know, it's always moving. It's always a work in progress.
Bill, we mentioned earlier on that first class, guys like Diego Cuglietta, guys like Anthony Nellis, who were playing as young players. I think one thing that I've really liked about what you've done here at Lake State, Damon, is you've integrated young players into the squad. They're not just fringe guys who are hoping that someday their number's going to get called. These are guys who have to be ready to step into the lineup because they are regularly in the lineup. They are counted on in these situations. So that lets them step up their development too as players and as leaders. How about Jakob Bengtsson, who, you know, again, as a freshman, played big, heavy minutes in key positions.
Yeah, and a lot of that's, you know, can be based upon the way your team's built. Like, I think Matt probably this year is the example where we weren't able to do as much, you know, because of the way, you know, Chase Gamblin played and Alex Ambrosio, and we won. You know, I think we lost back-to-back games once all year versus Mankato in our building. You know, so I think this year is maybe the year we weren't able to do as much of that. I thought Tyler Williams deserved to play more games. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought Josh Wildauer, he got hurt and that was part of it, but, you know, getting Josh Wildauer back in the lineup would have been beneficial. You know, Sebastian Medema came in at Christmas. He was good enough to play. He's a good hockey player, you know, but we knew he wouldn't, a little bit different there. So a little bit unique this year that we didn't do as much as that. But I also think it's an area where Mike York and Zach Sizek really excel. Probably Taylor Brown, you know, behind the scenes, getting guys, you know, sometimes it's leaner and quicker. Sometimes it's bulked up and stronger. But, you know, it starts with Taylor a little bit. And then Mike and Zach do a tremendous job in skill development. And, you know, you look at Diego, I don't think anybody in the country would have thought he would have jumped to 24 goals and do the job he did. So I think, you know, the assistant coaches do a great job with development, you know, really, really building strong relations with our guys to keep believing and the faith. I think Miro Mook is another great example. You know, Miro didn't play a whole lot his freshman year, in and out a little bit sophomore year. I think he's in line for a huge year this year. And, you know, that credit goes to Mike and Zach and the job they've done with him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's the key, is guys have to – they're what I call step-up players, and I think you've got some of those. I think Benny Poso would fit into that, a step-up player. You're going to expect more from him this year than – you got 4 goals out of him last year. That's pretty good for a freshman, but we're going to expect more out of Spencer Denbesty. He didn't really get a chance to show us much of anything except in practice, and I think he's a good player. He could – and Wildauer and Williams are the other two. They're going to have to step up. A freshman – they are what they are, and you do what you can with them. But guys who've been around for a season, you expect a little bit more out of them.
Yeah, and that's the question you started with way back is, you know, we've lost some key guys. Ashton Calder, Pete Viette, you know, or two of them. We lost some firepower and some scoring ability. And, you know, we may have to be a little different, a little bit more by committee. But guys that you mentioned, Logan Genuine's another one. But we need Tyler Williams to take a step. You know, Dustin Manns, you know, has to get back on track offensively this year. And I know he will. Louis Bedon is really going to have to be, you know, emerge. He's already a very good player. But he's going to be that guy that can really put the team on his back like Pete did and do that. Jack Jeffers, you know, he's a little bit more comfortable in our system and our terminology, and we're going to need Jeffers to do that. And then continue, as we've done a really good job of getting contributions from our back end, you know, we'll need that D-core to be very involved in helping to replace some of those losses as well.
Yeah, you got a lot of good players going out the door. You got Rydell and Keibel on defense. You got Merrick Mittens as a goaltender who's playing in the AHL right now. Alex Ambrosio, you mentioned Chase Gamblin. We haven't even talked about Yuki Miura. What a big loss he is in the dressing room, on the ice, blocking shots, all the things that he did that people don't really think about much. And to me, I think one of the MVPs of this team, who wasn't mentioned that way but played well, is Hampus Erickson, and he's gone. And, I mean, seems like he just came in here yesterday, and he's out of here. And Ashton Calder and Mike Manera. So there's a lot of – There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, and that's NCAA sports, right? It's not like, you know, pro, where you can hang on to some of those core guys for years and years. So, you know, it's something we're all used to, and these guys live it in junior hockey. You know, they get shipped and traded, or a new guy comes in. So it's pretty remarkable how, you know, resilient they are and what they do. But, yeah, we're excited about this team. And again, we're not going to make any bones about it. We're going to get back to the NCAA tournament, and we're going to take a step in that. And to do that, we're going to need some guys to take a step forward and, you know, fill some roles that were vacated by graduating seniors and others. And, you know, but that's what this game's all about. So we got the pieces to do it.
Well, those guys have to be fired up too. I would think Benny Poso right now is very much looking forward. He's probably working hard in that weight room because that's what he needs. He needs more strength. And it could be a great year for him as a sophomore, and that's Williams, and that's Wildauer, and that's Denbesty. That's where they can go. We're going to take a break. We're halfway through our show here for the month of June, and we'll take a break. We'll be right back with more on ESPN 1400. Welcome back to the Laker Hockey Show. It's our June edition. Bill Crawford, Matt Pocket, talking with the Lakers head coach, Damon Whitten. And Damon, we've talked a little bit about what you're going to be doing here very near future, getting out on the road again, which I'm sure you're looking forward to. We haven't really talked about staff at this point. You've mentioned a couple of times Mike York's name, Zach Sizek's name. We're assuming they're both coming back as assistant coaches. It's so important to have continuity, in my opinion. I think the better teams the Lakers have had over the many years I've been around, they've maintained coaching continuity in there and kept things. The message has been the same, and the players get used to that, and they kind of like it. Things could get stale, too, but
sure,
that's up to the head coach to make sure they don't get stale, so that would fall on you. But we're assuming they're back. How about Mike Guggen? How about Taylor Brown? The support staff here that's so important.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, it's still a little bit early in the summer as things open up and emerge, but, you know, as of right now, the plan is to have them all back. You know, Mike Guggen is a happily married man after this past weekend, so we want to wish Mike congratulations on his wedding, and then Zach Sizek has a wedding this upcoming Friday. So it's a busy time in the chapels around town and around the state for those guys. But it's a great staff. You know, Pat Sarnie's done a really good job. Taylor mm-hmm. Brown has been tremendous, and the hope is they're all back. You know, I know Googs has a couple things that he's kind of looking at for the next step in his career, and you know, some of the coaches that have reached out on Mike Guggen and his opportunities. You know, I've told him he's over ready. You know, and that's what we ask our players, you know, when you're over ready, come in. And Googs is over ready, so I'd love to have him back, and I hope he is back, but at the same point, he's ready for the next challenge in his career, so we'll see where that goes. But again, just want to wish him and Kayla a happy marriage moving forward, and congrats on last weekend.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. I mean, both of those guys get married in the span of what, a couple of weeks here? So I mean, how often does that happen in a program, right?
A little bit unique. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of nice to, you know, get out of the rink and be able to be together in those settings as well. So it's just a different thing, and you know, and it's a staff with great chemistry. There's no question about it. You know, we talk a lot that it doesn't feel like you're going to work. You know, we're very fortunate that way that, you know, and we work a lot. You know, there's in season, it's 7 days a week and, you know, many, many hours. And so to be with people like that where it doesn't feel like a job is pretty unique. And we're very, very fortunate and very aware of that.
You mentioned getting out of the rink. It's funny because Mike actually did his ceremony
in the rink.
Yeah. So
he's marrying the right person if she's letting him get back in the rink for that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, she's great. And, you know, they're a great family, and we're very fortunate they're here.
More questions concerning the future. We're certainly looking forward to seeing people like Brett Rollison and Dawson Tritt and Cole Kraft. And you mentioned Josh Nixon a few moments ago, still playing for Maryland in the North American Hockey League playoffs. Grant Hinman, who comes in as a really highly touted defensive-type defenseman, who's also a leadership person. And then we've got Sebastian Medema, who's been with us half a year now. He practiced all the time, second semester. And I'm really excited about Timo Backus. Not only is he a good player from what I've read about him, but he's a German national, so that keeps the Kybel connection going, and I kind of like that too.
Yeah, and I think we talked last time, but Lukas Kybel actually wears number 22,
right?
Because growing up, his idol was Backus' dad. So it's a crazy connection there. But yeah, I mean, those... You know, we've got to recruit the right players and good players and things like that. But we certainly have had success of kind of keeping some pipelines going. And, you know, we got the recent Latvian as well that will keep that Latvian pipeline going after Mitz here. But, yeah, you know what? It's a group we like. You know, we think the hockey IQ in this group is really, really good. Obviously, that's something that is very important to us as we recruit. You know, I think structurally and adjustment-wise, I feel like we throw a lot at our players. And I think we can do that because they're intelligent enough to, you know, watch film or rep drills and then go apply it to their games. But high hockey IQ, you know, in amongst that group, and you know, those guys are going to have big opportunities to come in and fight for a role and earn a role. And we're excited about it. You know, Hesse had a great year as well. And you know, that goalie room is really strong. Those guys push each other. It's going to be a fierce competition. But you know, he knows early on that he's probably going to be more of a third string goaltender. And then he's going to really push and fight for his opportunity. When Seth or Ethan move on, he's going to be ready to step in there and fight for a number one role. So we're really excited to get a kid of his caliber in that position.
One thing that interests me a little bit is just the difference between North America and Europe in terms of youth development. Because here, we're used to seeing our own organizations. You've got somebody like, say, the Sioux Eagles here in town, for example. But over in Europe, and I think people recognize this from Sweden, for example. These youth organizations are oftentimes part of a professional team, so you get a little bit of a different exposure that way instead of being your own thing. How do you think that impact player development for those guys before they come over here?
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, for a lot of those guys, it's in their communities. You know, depending where you're from in the cities, some of the smaller town kids have to move away. But, yeah, it's a different model. You know, you grow up playing in your hometown all the way through the organization. And I think because you're attached to pro organization, you probably get exposed to more developmental opportunities because of the caliber of coaches in the organization, former pro players, things like that. So, you know, obviously, you know, we've got Doug LaPrade coaching in our town. That's pretty fortunate for kids in our town that guys like him have stuck around and coach and give back and things like that. So, but I think there's a lot of that in those communities, certainly in Sweden, and they have such a huge focus on skill development. They're on Olympic ice sheets, so you have to skate over there to play at a high level. So, yeah, I think it does give them a little bit of an advantage in terms of what they see. You know, if you're a kid growing up in Detroit, you're probably playing for 4 to 6 different organizations and switching organizations year to year. So there's a little bit more inconsistency. I guess the positive, you're maybe exposed to more styles of play and things like that. But the consistency is certainly much different for a lot of our American kids growing up in the bigger cities.
You know, we talked a little bit about Logan Genuin a few moments ago. He's a player who was cut loose at Arizona State 2 years ago, came to Lake Superior State. He didn't get to play last year, but hey, he can play, and we saw him practice, and there's a high-end skill right there. He's a Michigan kid. He's the kind of kid you like to have. And another guy we haven't mentioned yet is the transfer we've got coming through the portal from Ferris State, Jake Willits on defense. And Jake Willits is going to – that's a solidifying force on defense. He'll be a – I think he'll be a junior this year, so he's been around a couple of years. He knows the league and knows the game, and he's going to help.
Yeah, you know, and I think Logan is going to be one of those guys that, you know, has to get off to a good start and be part of the solution to provide offense for us. You know, he's got an unbelievable track record of scoring goals, and that's something that we're going to need because of some of our losses there. So we're excited to have Logan kind of fully on board and ready to go. That's a good addition to our program. And it's not, you know, a freshman coming in where you're learning some things. He's played college hockey, and he understands that. And same thing with Jake Willits. You know, we kind of went back and forth if we would address our D-Corps in the transfer portal at all. And I think ultimately for me and the staff, you know, we lost two key seniors that were very experienced, played all situations. So we felt like getting a transfer, somebody with 2 years of college hockey under his belt, former, you know, WCHA rookie of the, or all rookie team. And we just felt like we couldn't pass up that experience for what we were losing on the back end. So I think it's going to be extremely competitive back there, but Jake's a very good hockey player, and you know, it's been interesting to see some of the people reach out on him. He's a Michigan kid, you know, great Michigan high school player, great junior player. So we had a lot of people have reached out and just said, hey, you're really gonna enjoy coaching him. He's gonna add a great element to our team.
When you go into the transfer portal, are you looking for specific names or specific areas of need? Are there ever situations where maybe you see somebody's name hit the portal and you go, you know, we really don't need that, but man, I would love to have that here.
I think it's, since it's so new, Matt, like right now you're logging in every day and it's slowed down. There not much has gone on in a long time. I mean, there was such a surge early on, so you're just trying to see what's in there and if it is a fit. So for us, you know, we're just taking every name that comes up and see, hey, can it help us? You know, we love our culture. We love our team. Are there pieces that we can improve and add and get us over the next level, the next step? I mean, there always is. You know, there's always, you know, that's our job, to get the best players in here and over-recruit anybody. And so we're always looking at that and examining that. But we've also found ourselves, you know, 99% of the time this year saying, you know, we like our team. Like, we're not, that person is not, you know, different enough or good enough that we would take him over what we already have. So we've got a lot of confidence in the players in that locker room.
What kind of resources do you have available in the portal? Because, I mean, I've got something that's been made public here, but it's not the portal as you guys see it necessarily. Are there scouting reports on players? Are there different kinds of write-ups about what this guy is maybe like as a person/player? What do you have access to in there?
And I don't know how much we're supposed to say on it, but I mean, the NCAA portal is just simply a database of players who enter. You know, if we have somebody who wants to transfer, they go to our compliance coordinator. Our compliance coordinator puts him in the database. So, yeah, there's nothing else. Now, once that's in there, we have other resources that we'll go to check back. And that's hard in today's game. Even when kids commit at 16, you know, I think when the stockpiling first started happening, you really wouldn't report on guys once they were committed. And now 5, 6, 8 years later, we see so many pushbacks, so many guys drop that, like, we got to keep doing reports, because when school X drops them in 3 years, we want to make sure we have some reports that weren't from when they were playing U16 hockey. So that's really changed. So we have, you know, our own reports. We have some other sources that we use. Certainly your relationships you have where they play junior hockey. What's interesting with Jake Willits, for example, is we've had 2 or 3, maybe 4 guys in our locker room that play junior hockey with them. Some of the Robert Morris guys, you know, we have our players. Hey, coach, you know, we just heard this happen. You should call this guy or look into it. Or I played with him. He would help us type thing. So your locker room becomes really important as well.
Yeah, you just mentioned Robert Morris, too, and that's news Matt wanted to talk about in this show today. Robert Morris has dropped hockey. We're not sure what's going on there. It's probably more political and from administration than it is from athletics point of view, but Atlantic Hockey gets hurt there. That's a pretty good program. We've played them a couple of times in the past. I was always impressed by how they played, and there must be some players there who would be immediately available who could help teams.
Yeah, Derek Schooley's done a really good job of building that program. He might be their only coach in history, I think.
I think he is.
Yeah, Derek's done a really good job. And, you know, it's shocking. I mean, it came out of nowhere. So I think the whole college hockey world, really the whole hockey world, that doesn't matter what level, we're shocked by it. And in the other Pittsburgh organizations, you saw the Steelers comment on it. The Penguins certainly very disappointed. They want a college team in that market. So, you know, a bad day for college hockey and just, you know, totally shocking. And there are, you know, talented hockey players in that locker room that are, you know, highly sought after.
And I don't think it's necessarily just that it happened. It's how it happened. There was a real lack of communication going on. Kevin Colbert, the GM of the Pittsburgh Steelers, was on RMU's board of trustees. He quit.
Yeah.
Just said, that's it. I'm not being a part of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm not sure if it's all said and done or what'll happen, but there's certainly, you know, a bad taste in the mouth of many that the way it went down and the lack of communication, as you mentioned. So, you know, it's a bad day for college hockey. And, you know, there's been, you know, with Huntsville, there's some challenges in our sport, and, you know, there's some room to grow as well. So hopefully those keep coming along.
Okay, we'll be back for our final segment of the Laker Hockey Show, our June edition. We're going to take a break right here, and we'll be right back after this on ESPN 1400. Welcome back to our final segment of the Laker Hockey Show for the month of June. Bill Crawford, Matt Pocket talking with Damon Whitten, the head coach of the Lakers. And been an interesting show so far. We've talked about a lot of things, everything from your contract extension and needing a new athletic director with Dave Pateson saying he's leaving at Lake Superior State to players that we've got. And we were talking a few moments ago about the newcomers who are coming in, and I thought it got kind of interesting there. You have to be really careful as a head coach and as a staff what you do, because I thought the most important thing you've said so far is you can't upset team chemistry. You've got to be able to have that culture. You know what that culture is. You know what you want. We're talking about Logan Genuine coming in this year. Last year, Brandon Percelli played. He had left University of Minnesota Duluth. I thought Brandon Percelli was outstanding. Yeah. I mean, you talk about a gamble that paid off. That kid, he does everything well.
Yeah. And that line was
he's
great
a heck of a
stretch.
Player.
Yeah. Very good player for us. Yeah. Yeah. And I, like I said, we're very cautious of that. You know, and again, I think people be surprised of how connected the hockey world is, you know, a little bit different maybe with some of the Europeans, but even, you know, Jacob Nordquist came over, played. Like, it's amazing how these guys all know each other from the American kids, you know, were in Buffalo National Festival. They might have been the same team back as a U16, or, you know, their buddy's buddy, and their best friend played with the kid and billeted together in another city. So they're really connected. And, you know, it's important that you have trust, because I want a player to come to me and say, coach, no way. We don't don't want that kid in our locker room and our organization. And they do that, you know, or the opposite. When they really want a kid or think he'd be a great fit, they're very, you know, they're very open about, you know, why he would fit or why they wouldn't fit. And so your locker room becomes really important of who you're adding into that. And, you know, it's nice when you have a kid from that organization or that team because they can already talk about his character, his work ethic, and, you know, where they'd fit in that locker room.
I think that's becoming a big part of modern sport at all levels. We see this professionally, too. It's very close-knit. You see this in the pro leagues, and maybe 20, 30 years ago, everybody's used to, you know, rivalries and punch-ups and that kind of thing, and all these teams kind of hate each other. But nowadays, it's very buddy-buddy, I think, throughout throughout sports.
Yeah, that's much more connected. And I, you know, like for me, I, you know, if I watch a game and, you know, a regular or playoff game, and then afterwards the kids are talking, I can't handle that because I'm from a different era. Like, you know, you never would.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah.
So it is hard for me. But, you know, it's very connected. Our world's very connected with you know, the ways we have to do it and the social media, things like that. So, you know, and these kids, they need that connection. So, you know, let's do it after the game in the concourse, not on the ice, but they all know each other. So it's amazing to see. You'd never think some of our guys, like Jacob Nordquist came to us on one or two guys in the portal, and, you know, they were in Fargo for a month and they roomed together, something like that. Like, it's unbelievable the way how many guys they know.
Yeah, everybody knows everybody. I've always said that about hockey. It's a tight knit, even at the pro level. It's small. I mean, some of the experiences even that I've had out of Sault Ste. Marie, I mean, I'm watching a game the other night where Las Vegas won in overtime and Mark Stone scores a game-winning goal. I worked with Mark Stone's father, Rob, at the Sault Star 30 years ago, and that's his son, and he's a superstar player in the NHL. You know, I'll talk to Rob and I'll say, you know, you got it made right now. That kid's making millions of dollars. He's taking care of the old man somewhere down the line. But that's hockey. That's the way this game is. And you know people, you get to know people, and as you work your way through, I mean, Don Lucia, I can remember Don Lucia as coach up in Fairbanks and talking to him and interviewing him before games. Now he's a commissioner of the CCHA.
Yeah, and after a legendary coaching career as well. So it's a very tight-knit game, which is it's part of what makes it so special. And, you know, that's what we all love about it.
You mentioned the CCHA a minute ago, Bill, and it's going to be a little bit different this year, Damon. It's not just going to be new logos on the ice. What can we expect to see different, especially for fans who maybe weren't in the building last year? What's going to be different, the things they'll notice right out of the gate with the new league?
Well, I think we all have to learn St. Thomas. You know, Rico Blase coming back behind the bench after a couple of years away. So, you know, that's one thing. There's a new team. I think the feeling is that they will get up to speed very quickly. I think when we see new programs, or if we see new programs with the transfer portal, it's not going to take as much time as it typically used to do. So so they'll be good right away, and they've got some key transfers in there as well. So they're going to have a good team. But that's part of it. I think the biggest thing is going to be there's not an easy weekend. I mean, it's I think the competition level's off the charts. I think last year we kind of showed how good the WCHA was, and now the you know, all the top teams are coming over to this league. So I think it's going to be just an extremely competitive league, as it always is. I think the one thing we know is Mankato is going to be the team that you know, somebody has to knock off, and until we do that, they're going to lead the way. It's going to be a tremendous hockey, and I think it's going to be a great product for everybody.
Yeah, you look at some of the changes that have been made. I was looking at some stuff the other day on Northern Michigan. They've upgraded all their facilities. Their dressing room and everything is top shelf. I saw some pictures of it. It was pretty impressive. And Joe Sean's done a great job over at Tech, and they're very competitive. And he's added Tyrone Brawny from Alabama Huntsville to his lineup, which will help him. And they're going to be good, and you mentioned Mankato, and you know Bemidji's going to be competitive and going to be good. They might have lost Zach Driscoll, but I'm sure Tom has got somebody in mind there that can fill in and do a great job there. It's a great league, and I think St. Thomas is going to be really good right out of the gate. I think they'll be a good team. So, you know, interesting, we talked before the show, I noticed that Alaska Fairbanks has got a full schedule. I mean, God bless them up there. I mean, they're scrambling trying to keep the sport alive at the D1 level. They're going to play 16 home games, 20 away games, but they're going to play Minnesota, UMD, Vermont, Maine, Arizona State, They've done a great job. That's great, really good.
It's great to see, you know, and I know that we were originally going to try to get in on there, then just some things changed for us on our end. But that's great to see, you know, and I think people, you know, want to do the same thing for Huntsville and help Huntsville as best we could. It's a bit different. Fairbanks, if fans don't know, those are exempt games. So, you know, if you go up there and play in Alaska, that doesn't count against your 34 game limit, and you can go now play more games. So I know some teams will take advantage. You know, you can get extra home games, make some money and things like that. So there is an advantage they have that Huntsville does not, but, you know, it's a program that's been really committed for many years, and I hope there's a solution on the horizon for
them. Yeah, Rico's going to go up there and play two games, so he's going to get two free ones for St. Thomas right there. Good move on their part. And you know, this league is going to be interesting. It's going to be a different game, back to the CCHA, no more WCHA, unless we turn it around in a couple of years. You never know what's going to happen. But as far as we know, the last playoff champions of the WCHA, Lake Superior State University. That's pretty nice.
That is pretty nice. And it's, you know, we'll, you know, maybe it's the last time we'll talk about it here and, you know, enjoy it. But we're going to move the trophy up top into the showcase. If anybody's, you know, in Taffy Able, it'll be up in the showcase on display either this week or next week for that. But it's time for us to put it away and, you know, really fully turn the page. And that leadership group I talked about earlier on, you know, they talked about that as well. Like, you know, this is over. It's a new group. Season's over. You know, we had a good team. This next year team is going to be even better, and we need to move forward at this point. So it's time, but it was a great season and just under unbelievably trying circumstances. And as I mentioned at some point as well, I just want to remind people Great Lakes State Weekend is out there. We anticipate people on campus in the building. So, you know, double check our social media sites to get that date in your calendar and grab your hotel and make your plans to get up. It'll be the first look at that Rico Blase St. Thomas team in our building. And, you know, we'll have a couple of good games under our belt. I think we're close to announcing a schedule the next couple of weeks as well. Maybe we'll try to time it for the July show potentially and give it a few weeks. But that full schedule non-conference games is completed and, you know, almost ready to go as well. And I think fans will really enjoy what that looks like.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the schedule. I checked that website at least once a week to see, and I noticed it was not updated for a new schedule, which I just assume it's not complete yet. We're trying to fill in some holes here and there. And is there anything you can tell us about the schedule? Are there some non-conference games that might be real interesting for our fans that are pretty much set?
Yeah, there will be, no question. And I think, you know, we'll have the national program up for a single game in the second half, as we have done, and working with Scott Monahan's always great. And I know Scott looks forward to getting back here and seeing people and, you know, getting back in the facility. You know, we'll have two non-conference home series after that St. Thomas weekend, and we'll start the year on the road a couple times as well. And one of those will include a trip down to Ann Arbor, and then they'll return next year. So that'll be, a great matchup this year, but certainly I know our fans will be excited to have Mel bring the team up next fall and, you know, continue that, you know, competition between these two universities.
Yeah, I don't make too many road trips anymore, but that's
one
I
going
would make.
On?
I have a lot of friends at the University of Michigan.
So yep.
We'll try to take that one in. You know, you mentioned a few moments ago, too, you said, well, we've got a Latvian player. That's a future player. That's not somebody who's coming in this year. Fans kind of jump on that and they go, well, who's the Latvian who's coming in? But that's a future. We don't even have the name as yet because the NLI is probably not signed. But more recruiting in that area, and we're going to have a player come in. Merrick Smittens goes out. We'll have another one coming in.
Always recruiting, and you know, anywhere we can do it. And again, it's gonna be great to get back in the rinks. We've been on lockdown for 14 months in terms of NCAA ability to get us to leave campus. So, you know, I know Mike and Zach and I are just kind of chomping to get back in the rinks, and a lot of it we'll be watching our own guys as well and kind of assessing where they're at. But you know, it's going to be really enjoyable to get out there and start evaluating and continue to build and you know, finding the players that fit our style of play and our culture and keep up at this championship level.
Well, that takes care of our June show. Damon, thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to be a part of it. Matt, as usual, and we'll have another show middle of July. Look for it on a Tuesday right around the middle of the month, whatever that date may be. And it'll replay on a Thursday morning, and we'll podcast it as well. If you miss it completely, you can always listen at your own leisure by going to the podcast. And again, thanks, guys, for being here. Another good show.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Matt. And have a great week to everybody tuning in.
All righty, that takes care of the Laker Hockey Show for the month of June on ESPN 1400.